So there I was, browsing the shelves of a downstairs junk shop in Manchester, and sitting all alone was this pretty good condition Memorex cassette tape, a Memorex 90 minute from the DB series, unmarked with black labels. And nothing written either on the cassette case or on side A or B. And I thought, that's intriguing. Well, I wonder what is on there. It had been played about maybe 20 minutes in. And so I spoke to the guy behind the counter, how much for this cassette? And he said, 49p. I thought, that's quite specific. I wonder if this cassette is worth 49p. Well, already my intrigue was worth it. And so I picked it up for 49p. And then I told the internet, look what I found, 49p, guess what's on it. And a few people guessed that I foolishly said, oh, I'll let you know what it is in my newsletter. And then I realised I'm very far away from any of my cassette players. And I'll be writing my newsletter from this very hotel room tomorrow morning if I can get up early enough in Manchester. So I needed to find a cassette player in Manchester to find out what was on it. And I did. Not at the BBC where I'm working at the moment, but thankfully Stephen Kilpatrick, Sound Fackery on Twitter, he said pop over to the University of Salford. He has a cassette deck and we can listen to it there. And so we did. And I live streamed the anticipation of us placing the cassette tape in and very cruelly stopped the recording, because I did promise to the readers of the newsletters that they would get the exclusive on what was on the tape. And it was quite amazing. Because I was expecting, to be honest, some kind of random mixtape or some cheesy 80s. And it wasn't. The moment we clicked play, it went straight in to a fascinating piece of music. And, well, I'll let you hear for yourself. We're actually going to play the tape from the beginning. There's a radio interview, and then you'll hear a documentary on BBC Radio 2. Someone had obviously just set it to record or clicked record to catch this programme and let it play through. So you will get it in its entirety. Fast forward, skip where you like. This is all of the audio we've managed to extract from the cassette tape as it was found.
From December 1986, New Beginning by Bucks Fizz. Did you find it necessary when you left to sustain the same sort of pop lifestyle?
My lifestyle, I did waste money, although looking back I'm not sorry that I did, because I had such a good time doing it. I didn't actually lead that lifestyle at home. I never used to have champagne at home and things like that. When we used to lead that lifestyle, it was mainly when our record company used to buy it for us. I suppose I'm more in a position to do that now because I feel so comfortable. I feel so at home. I love my husband so much and my children, and I love my house. I've got great neighbours. I'm in such a nice position where I don't always have to work. And I do have champagne now. Not that often, but I've got it in the fridge at home now. So it's not a champagne lifestyle, but it's a really comfortable life. And it's much more fulfilling than it was in the heady days of Bucks Fizz. Great days that I would never change. I loved them, but it's nice to look back on now rather than actually go through. I wouldn't go through it again.
So how would you say that your character has changed as a result of the incidences that life has dealt you?
I don't know. You'd have to ask my mates that. I don't think it's changed me at all. It probably has, I suppose. But I still think of myself as an East End girl. I like my lifestyle, how it's been, from my very youngest memories. to my memories now. I don't regret anything I've done, and I don't think I've changed other than grown up, the same as everybody else does. I wouldn't like to have been a success when I was 16 or 17, because then I think I would have changed drastically, because you haven't had time to get your feet on the ground at that time.
Cheryl Baker, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
This week on When the Going Gets Tough, Philip Fashnoo was talking to Cheryl Baker. Next week, at the same time, in the final programme of the current series, the studio guest will be actor Gordon Kay, alias Renee from Allo Allo. Produced by Phil Critchlow, When the Going Gets Tough is a unique broadcasting production for BBC Radio 2.
To 91 FM, this is Radio 2 from the BBC. The news at 9 o'clock, this is Patrick Lunt. The Bosnian government has declared itself satisfied that the conditions for a ceasefire have been met. The warring parties are still meeting in Sarajevo as hopes grow that a deal will come into effect later tonight. From Sarajevo, George Eakin.
There's still been no official word of what the meeting at Sarajevo Airport has decided, but an official at the Foreign Ministry in the capital, Mirza Hajric, has confirmed that the Bosnian government's delegation to the meeting took with them the message that it considered the preconditions of the ceasefire agreement to have been fulfilled. He said Sarajevo didn't yet have a complete electricity and gas supply, but much had been done and restoration of full supplies was expected shortly. He said there were no further obstacles, though the government would be looking for complete adherence to the terms of the agreement once fighting had halted. Lights and gas have come on in many parts of Sarajevo. Some residents have already eaten their first meals prepared on gas cookers for months.
In another development, UN officials say they are increasingly concerned about the fate of thousands of Muslim and Croat men in Serb-held areas of northern Bosnia. Refugees, mainly women and children, arriving in government-held areas say men of military age were taken away from them. The Conservative Party chairman, Brian Mawhinney, has been criticised for accusing a Labour-led council of helping to fund an Asian women's group. In his speech to the Tory conference at Blackpool, Mr. Mawhinney said groups funded by so-called loony left Labour councils showed what real Labour meant.
In Coventry, they threatened to give three-year-old girls assertiveness training. In Merton, they encouraged playgroups to ban the ugly duckling because of alleged racist overtones. And in Frank Dobson's Camden, you're not going to believe it, they gave a grant to the Camden Hopscotch Asian Women's Group.
The Save the Children charity, which jointly funds Hopscotch with Camden Council and the Home Office, expressed surprise and dismay at Mr. Mawhinney's comments. And Hopscotch's organiser, Sandra Mercado, said it was a pity Mr. Mawhinney chose to poke fun at the group's name rather than highlight its good work.
This name has been with the project for 10 years and it has a long history and tradition. Save the Children has been working in this area for the last 40 years. It is very unfortunate, but we are doing very good work here, and I think it would be nice for Mr. Mawhinney to come to Camden and see the work.
O.J. Simpson's first full-length television interview since being cleared of murder is to be broadcast tomorrow. He'll be interviewed for an hour on the American network NBC, but will not be paid for the appearance. A Newcastle United player has been arrested after an incident in a taxi in County Durham. Malcolm Allen, who also plays for Wales, is alleged to have run from the taxi without paying the fare. BBC News at 9:03. Our next at 10. Radio.
pants and khaki suits, why, gee, we look swell. Pull off that Yankee doodly down. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember, they called me Al. Why, it was Al all the time. Why, don't you remember, I'm your pal, buddy. Can you spare a dime?
We present John Thor in They Called Me Al, the story of Al Boley.
April 1941, the height of the war. The British have made their first ever bombing raid on Berlin. The Germans are out for revenge. Al Boley and his friend Jimmy Massini finish their variety turn at the Rex Cinema High Wycombe. They have a drink at the local pub. Then Al makes his way to the station to catch the last train back to town. He has a late night solo spot at the Barclay Hotel. The Blitz on London is at its height, but nothing will induce him to cancel the engagement.
In a big department store, there's a girl whose heart sings a song. She had word to say, he's on his way, and now it won't be long. There's a boy coming home on leave, and his heart won't be on his sleeve. They'll have a grand celebration when he comes home on leave. And as they meet, he'll tell her how he's missed her, that after he's kissed her. And then they'll talk about that wedding morning. They'll plan a honeymoon, the army can't wait so soon. There's a boy coming home on leave. He'll enjoy coming home on leave. They'll make it 10 days of heaven when he comes home on leave.
Al did his late-night solo spot at the Barclay Hotel and then went home to his West End flat. His girlfriend, Helen, was down in the shelter, but he went to bed. In the early hours of Thursday, the 17th of April, a landmine exploded not far away and blew in the windows of Al's block of flats. After the raid, the porter went round to check on the tenants. Al Boley was dead. Killed outright by the blast. Just 10 years before, in February in 1931, Al was recording his first big session with Ray Noble. Ray's new Mayfair Orchestra was the house band of his master's voice, and he'd been very impressed with two songs Al had recorded for them a few months before. Al had arrived in London from his native East Africa in July 1928, a fully experienced dance band singer and banjo player, with engagements in Berlin, Singapore, and South Africa under his belt. Some small breaks, some hard times, he even bussed in London's West End for a bit, and then the new Mayfair Orchestra and Ray Noble.
I asked Al if he sang Printed Keys, and he said yes. I didn't realize at the time that he was so anxious to work that if I'd said, would you climb trees by your tail, he'd have said yes too. Consequently, the first few records he made with me were a third too high.
And in my view, this is one of them.
I'm on my hands, you in my arms, nothing but love in view.
moments to spare for someone you care for, your love affair for two. With time on my hand and you in my arms and love in my heart,
following January, Ray Noble had got the full measure of Al's style, and he entrusted Al with his own new composition, By the Fireside.
In the gloaming, by the fireside, with you I'll be content. In the gloaming, by the fireside, every hour will be well spent. We'll see our hopes and dreams dim, like pictures in the fire, finding in it real our hearts desire. In an armchair by the fireside, just begin us for two. We'll be happy, oh so happy, while we do as lovers do. With no one there to notice, a little kiss or two in the gloaming. By the fireside with you.
Al soon became the resident vocalist with the new Mayfair Orchestra. His partnership with Ray Noble lasted for 7 eventful years, and they made literally hundreds of records together. Ray Noble again.
I got along very well with Al. When I found his vocal range, I picked songs more carefully for him, and we took to rehearsing routines together. He trusted my judgment.
As the number of his records with the new Mayfair increased, so did Al's reputation. His name was becoming known in dance band circles and to a wider public. But the new Mayfair was simply HMV's recording orchestra and rarely ventured outside the studio. Al needed public exposure. In the middle of 1931... he became resident vocalist with the Roy Fox Orchestra at the smart new West End restaurant, the Monseigneur. He was all set for the breakthrough to real popular success.
In an armchair by the fireside, just big enough for two, we'll be happy, oh so happy, while we do as lovers do. With no one there to notice, a little kiss or two in the gloaming by the fireside with you.
Roy Fox.
I led bands in the States for a good few years. Then, towards the end of 1930, came the offer of an 8-week engagement at the Café de Paris in London. When we came over, Ray Noble's drummer, Bill Hardy, heard that I was looking for a vocalist and arranged a meeting with Al Boley.
They clicked. So when the Monseigneur opened its doors on the 27th of May, 1931, to the music of Roy Fox and his orchestra, it was Al Boley standing at the microphone.
Dance all down, dancing around the floor, is this all that you are living for, must you be? Only a dance all down.
Only a dance all down.
Running wild, where does it lead to, foolish child? What is it getting you, can't you see? You're just a dance all down.
You're just a dance
all down. That happy tune to which the playing stride may turn into the blues.
What I'm playing.
All too soon, you will be cast aside like worn-out dancing shoes. Don't go on, wasting your youth away when it's gone. You'll learn it doesn't pay just to be only a dance hall dog.
Roy Fox.
In those days, the band leaders were comparable to film stars. They were the attraction of any club. The eyes of the girls as they danced past were automatically drawn to the band leader. But I soon noticed that Al Boley was beginning to attract the glances. In fact, if it was a choice between the band leader or the vocalist, I think on most occasions Al won out.
Joyce Stone, wife of Roy's pianist and successor at the Monseigneur, Lou Stone.
You couldn't help it. If you were dancing past him, you instinctively looked at Al. He had an enormous amount of charm. Very, very attractive eyes and a lovely smile.
Perhaps Al's main rival for the girl's attention was the Prince of Wales, who was a regular of the Monseigneur from the early days. Under royal patronage, the club never looked back. It became the place to be seen in. Dancing went on until 3 a.m. every morning. But the great new force was the wireless. In the early 1930s, broadcasting was sweeping the nation, and among the most popular of all the programs was dance band music from London's West End. It was not long before the BBC, still in its old headquarters in Savoy Hill, arranged for a regular broadcast every Wednesday night at 10:30.
This is the national program. And now we go over to the Monseigneur Club in Piccadilly to join the guests dancing to the music of Roy Fox and his orchestra. The vocalist is Al Boley.
You're my everything underneath the sun. You're my everything rolled up into one. You're my only dream, my only real reality. You're my idea of a perfect personality. You're my everything, everything I need. You're the song I sing and the book I read. You're away beyond the belief, and just to make it brief, you're my winter, summer, spring, my everything.
The solo pianist is Lou Stone. When Roy Fox fell sick in October 1931 and his doctor ordered a complete rest for several months, it was to Lou he turned to take over the leadership of the orchestra. Roy returned to London and took over again in April 1932. From The Gramophone.
The Monseigneur Orchestra, under the direction of Lou Stone, has become second to none in London.
From Melody Maker.
Lou Stone has performed miracles. He's brought the band to such a pitch of perfection that its name is on the tip of everybody's tongue. The band has achieved an almost unrivaled reputation on air and in the ballroom. and its records have reached a pitch of perfection which is nothing short of remarkable.
You're away beyond belief, and just to make it brief, you're my winter, summer, spring, my everything.
Roy Fox's contract with the Monseigneur, which came to an end a few months later, was not renewed. Lou Stone was asked to form a band and take over. In an enormously successful recording made in February 1932, while Roy was away, Al Bowley is joined for the vocal by Lou Stone and the band's dapper little drummer, Bill Harty. Minnie the Moocher went on to become one of the most popular standards of the Lou Stone band.
Now here's a story of Minnie the Moocher. She was a low-down hoochie-coocher. She was the roughest, toughest frail, but Minnie had a heart as big as a whale.
Minnie had a heart as big as a whale.
That, that, that,
too. That, that,
too. She did it, too.
Minnie had a heart as big as a whale.
Minnie had a heart as big as a whale.
She messed around with a bloke named Smokey. She loved him, though he was cokey. He took her down to Chinatown and showed her how to kick the gong around.
Showed her how to kick the gong.
Poor Smokey Joe,
poor Smokey Joe,
eeny-miny-moe,
eeny-miny-moe,
showed her how to kick the gong around,
showed her how to kick the gong around.
Now Min and Smokey started a fire, they got a free ride in the Black Mariah. She gave him the money to pay her bill, but he left her flat in a county jail.
Left her flat in a county jail.
Alibi, spies.
Alibi, spies.
Dimmel, dollar, bow.
Dimmel, dollar, bow.
But he left her flat in a county jail.
Left her flat.
Now they took her where they put the crazies. Now poor old Min is kicking up daisies. You've heard my story, this ends my song. She was a good gal, but they done her wrong.
Was a good gal, but they done her wrong.
Weeping Ginny,
weeping Ginny.
Poor Minnie.
Was a good gal, but they done her wrong.
Was a good gal, but they done
her wrong. For me. For me. For me. Now Al Bowley is poised for the ascent to the peak years of his career. He's recording several times a week with Ray Noble. He's appearing nightly with Lou Stone at the Monseigneur and broadcasting regularly. His voice, with its rich, warm tones, the artistry with which he uses it, his exceptional ability to sing every kind of song with a sincerity that reaches the listener. Above all, perhaps, his understanding of the microphone and what he can do with it. These are the elements that went to build his enormous popularity during the early 1930s.
Love is the sweetest thing. What else on earth could ever bring such happiness to everything as love's own story? Love is the strangest thing. No song of birds upon the wing shall in our hearts more sweetly sing than love's own
I only hope that fate may bring love story to you. Love is a sweeter thing.
After several guest appearances in British films, Lou Stone took the orchestra on a tour of the provinces and the London variety theatres, ending with a week at the London Palladium. Stanley Nelson, music critic of Era.
The hit of the show was, of course, Al Boley. His rendering of the Jewish number Letter to My Mother stopped the show.
Joyce Stone again.
It was an old Yiddish song, discovered in a second-hand bookshop by the father of Lou's trombonist, Lou Davis. English words were set to it, but Al Boley was taught how to pronounce the original Yiddish, word by word, by Lou Davis's wife.
A Letter to My Mother was an outstanding success for Al. All in the minor key, here's Al in a recording made with Ray Noble, and then in Yiddish in the version he made with Lou Stone.
I stray from home, why did I roam? I miss my mother's affection, her rocking chair, her silver hair is in my fond recollection. I see her in my dreams, she's crying very deep, though we are miles and miles apart. I'll bring a kiss to mother's heart. Oh, here is what I'm going to do. A brief letter, mama, I don't need the diamond. Your striking slim, liver skin, shake it in a home. Mommy said I'm brief malaysian, born Stephen Canadian. I'll fish mess a bitter herd, a cricket in a hornet.
A Letter to My Mother was reputedly one of his favourite songs. Perhaps it reminded him of his own widowed mother back in South Africa. In fact, later that same year, 1933, he sent for her, and she travelled to London to spend a few months with him. According to the family, Al, or Albert, was born in Portuguese East Africa, now Mozambique, on the 7th of January, 1900. But his birth was not registered until they moved to South Africa 3 years later. His mother was Lebanese, and his father, who was Greek, was named Aliki Pauli. When Aliki registered for his passport, his English was so poor that the clerk transcribed Pauli as Boley, and by 1933, the name Boley was beginning to mean something big in the UK. From Melody Maker.
On Monday night, the 11th of September 1933, full half an hour after the Hoban Empire had closed, there was an extraordinary scene when a mob of people, mostly women, besieged Al Boley for his autograph. He had just enjoyed a personal triumph on the stage, where he appeared for the first time as a solo variety artist. Al was accompanied by his old friend from pre-London days, Monia Lisa, a brilliant pianist who arrived in England in January hoping for work.
I don't need your photograph to keep by my bed. Your picture is always my head. I don't need your portrait, dear, to call you to mind. For sleeping or waking, dear, I find the very thought of you, and I forget to do the little ordinary things that everyone ought to do. I'm living in a kind of daydream. I'm happy as a king. and foolish, though it may seem. Why to me, that's everything, the mere idea of you, the longing here for you. You'll never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you. I see your face in every flower, your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
February 1933. The News Chronicle presents a unique dance band competition. Who's the more popular, Al Boley or Bing Crosby? Two records will go on sale, one featuring Boley, the other Crosby. You, the public, will be the judge.
Al's entry, What More Can I Ask?
What more can I ask than your arms around me? What more do I need? Now your lips have found me, even though we may realize we're living in a fool's paradise. What's sweeter to hear than love's old sweet story? What matter, my dear, if you're not sincere? For when the moon's above, you whisper words of love. This must be heaven. What more can I ask?
And Bing's riposte, replete with scat and the famous whistle, I'm Young and Healthy.
I'm young and healthy, and you've got charm. It would really be a sin not to have you in my arms. I'm young and healthy, so let's be bold. In a year or two or three, maybe we will be too old.
The result, confirmed by a firm of chartered accountants. Sales of the American record, 20,000. Sales of the British one, 28,000. Al Boley is the hands-down winner.
On Sunday afternoons in the 30s, many listeners tuned in to the commercial stations broadcasting in English from the continent. Radio Luxembourg, Radio Normandy, and the rest. Al often broadcast on them. In one show, a takeoff of American-sponsored radio, Al, introduced under the unlikely name of Bang Horsby, performs a wicked little skit on Crosby's crooning style. Note the throb in the voice on key words.
You'll never understand just why my loving you was grand. I I know you cheated me, and you were mean. But I just closed my eyes as though I hadn't seen. I know that you could never realize, la da di da 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 dee, that I found heaven in your eyes. And though it fooled me, I still think you're grand. That's something you never understand.
You're listening to They Called Me Al, here on Radio 2.
Al little realized in 1933 that he would soon be meeting Bing Crosby. RCA Victor, the recording company, invited Ray Noble to come to the States and form an orchestra. Ray asked two colleagues to go with him, Bill Harty and Al Boley. In October, Al said farewell to Lou Stone.
Was on a steamer coming over, life began all anew. A perfect sea, a sunny sky, for there was she and there was I. What could we do? I knew I was a lucky rover. Every day our love grew. Our hopes were high, our hearts were free, and she and I were both at sea. What could we do?
Morris Elwin in the magazine Rhythm.
Instead of being glad that Al Boley is going to America, I feel sorry. It seems such a pity to allow a potential box office colossus to slip through our fingers. Not one of our showmen has had the foresight to see the big money in Al Boley, a ready-made star, already popular with millions of listeners, appealing and chock-full of personality.
Ray Noble faced some initial problems with the American Musicians Union, but Al was free to perform. He'd no sooner landed in the States than he was grabbed by NBC.
Al Boley has signed a big long-term contract with NBC. He'll be starting in the Bromo Zelta Hour with Victor Young and his orchestra.
Victor Young was Bing Crosby's musical director. A few days after setting foot in America, Al was in front of the microphone in Bing Crosby's studio at American Decca, under the baton of Victor Young. From his first recording session in the States, a major success, Be Still My Heart.
Hear the song of the wind and the rain. What a night, what a mournful refrain. Something tells me that my love no longer cares. Listen, can't you hear those footsteps on the stairs? Be still, my heart. I can tell who's knocking at my door. Love has come to say that we must part. Be still, my heart. Just read those eyes, trembling lips that don't know where to start. Even though you know they're telling lies, be still my heart. She hears the rumbling of a drum. Love bids her come and she must go. She's leaving me and leaving you for someone new. And though we'll miss her so, we'll never let her know. Don't cry, my heart. Even though our love has gone away, she'll be coming back to us someday. Be still, my heart.
Accompanying Al to the States was his girlfriend, Margaret Fairless, known as Margie. His earlier and impulsive marriage had proved disastrous, but in December 1934, Al and Margie tied the knot. Meanwhile, Ray Noble's union problems were ironed out, and he was free to direct the orchestra backing Al's first solo recordings for HMV, perhaps the best recordings Al Boley ever made. Among them, Blue Moon and this, You and the Night and the Music.
You and the night and the music fill me with flaming desire, setting my being completely on fire. You and the night and the music thrill me, but will we be one? After the night and the music are gone, until the pale light of dawning and daylight, our hearts will be throbbing because morning may come without warning and take away. If we must live for the moment, love till the moment is through, after the night and the music die, will I have you. Night and the music will me, but will we be one? After the night and the music are gone, until the pale light of dawning and daylight, our hearts will be throbbing guitars. Morning may come without warning and take away the stars. If we must live for the moment, love till the moment, after the night and the music die, will I have you.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are in New York's exclusive Rainbow Room, high up in the Rockefeller Center, 65 stories nearer the stars, the city's top dining and dancing spot. And tonight, together with the smart set assembled here, we celebrate the opening of the sophisticated Ray Noble Orchestra and the man who's become the sensation of the States, the British singing star, Al Boley.
The
touch of your hand upon my head, the love in your eyes, the sun, and now at last, the moment divine, the touch of your lips on mine.
Ray Noble and Al were literally on top of the world. The band played daily, Monday to Saturday until 3 a.m. There was a regular weekly broadcast, coast to coast, on NBC from the Rainbow Room, and a further series of half-hour radio shows sponsored by the Coty Cosmetics Company. Within 10 days of his first broadcast, Al was receiving thousands of letters each week from across the nation. Every night, hundreds of fans, clamoring for Al's autograph, milled around the entrance to the Rockefeller Center to catch a glimpse of him. But success is a fickle creature. In the autumn, the Coty Company did not renew the contract for their show, and there came talk of cutting some of the band's salaries. Then Ray Noble was offered a personal contract to join the Burns and Allen radio show in Hollywood. There was no room.